I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 598. Your gamer cred should be in your fingers.
Not up on the wall.
This is Electric Sisterhood, home of the original.
The fucking original.
Girl gaming tech gadget and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi, sis.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I've had caffeine. It's a good day when I have caffeine. And also, again, on the chunky girl lifestyle, I gotta say, I had a craving for Reese's Pieces, and I had to go to two different Walgreens, but I finally found a bag of Reese's Pieces, because I'm not about the Reese's Cups. Like, all y'all who are fans of the Reese's Cups, props to you. That's not where I live. I like Reese's Pieces. I don't like M&M peanuts. Them things is nasty. I want Reese's Pieces. Okay? I want a little bit of chocolate, a lot of bit of peanut.
I mean,
not,
I can't...
a lot of bit of chocolate with a lot of bit of peanut. That ratio is too much.
Like, I can't say too much because, like, this morning before we did the show, like, I was craving, like, an old-fashioned Esh breakfast in a way that I have not had.
Yeah, I know. Now I'm craving it, too, which means when I leave here, I actually got to go and make grits. So thanks for that.
I'm sorry.
Please take you.
But, like, it's been a while since we've had our traditional grits, bacon, and eggs. Like, I don't think I've cooked it in, like, the last 4 years.
Well, all you got to do is, like, tell me on a Wednesday, hey, yo, I want to do that
well,
this weekend.
Is the thing. Wednesday, I wasn't thinking. You know what I'm going to do on Sunday?
Because let me tell you something, sis. Grits for one, that shit's kind of lonely.
Well, I mean, I made it for me and my husband, so it was grits for two.
Yeah, but what did I just say?
I still have half a pot of grits, and I'm like, I clearly, because, you know, Esh Mom taught us to cook for, you know, at least four or five. So my
because
ratio
you never
is
know when a
too
dude
much.
Is extra hungry, so you need to
right.
cook
at least
grits for four.
Right. So, but no, like, and I was just craving it. And I mean, unfortunately, I think the town that I live in is a little lax on the melanin.
Mm. They're not highly melanated?
Not really. So, like, I went to my local shop that's right
Are
down
you
the street.
The melanin?
I think, yeah. I definitely, I'm the lone chocolate chip in this
in
cookie.
In the cookie? Aw.
I think. I have not seen any others. I'm sure they're here. I just
maybe
haven't found
maybe
them.
They're out on the edges of the cookie.
Maybe, like they're deeply embedded down.
Yeah.
But I went to my local shop and like they had everything I needed except for the grits. And I said, what? So I had to go all the way to Marky Barky, which is like deep in my town, which is not too far. It's like 10 minutes away from my house. But like, I was ready to like go get this real quick and have this by like 10. But of course, because I had to go deep into town, like I didn't have breakfast until like 11, which is fine. Because most of the time,
ain't nothing wrong with brunch.
Our Esh breakfast is usually more of a brunch style anyway.
Truth.
But I had it all going and I'm like, Esh Mom would be so proud of me. And of course, Hot Mess was like, fuck you, bitch, for not telling me. And I'm like, I just decided this morning.
I just didn't want to use that language because he had already stated all the things that I needed to
do. Man, he already, I decided this at 6 a.m. You ain't up. And
no, but let me tell you something. Let me tell you something right now. If you call me at 6 in the morning, not 10,
be like, hey,
call me
be like,
at 6 in the morning.
Mail. Hey, Ninja, make it grits for breakfast. Be at my house by 11.
Like, I would have been at your house at 10:15 with mimosas. So don't even play like that. Don't text me in the morning because I'm not going to wake up
right,
because I have my do not disturb on. But you are one of my emergency calls. So if you call me at any time of the day, it's going to ring.
So that was one. Two.
Mm-hmm.
Like
it
like,
was a lazy Sunday for you and your man. I know. Whatever.
It's not even that. But just two in reference to Hot Mess. He has had several grits breakfasts.
Oh, I know.
He did not tell you or me.
I know.
So I didn't feel bad about that.
No, you shouldn't.
And
it's
two,
good.
He
it's
also cool. has made sofrito beans.
Look, I don't even want to talk about the sofrito. Look, I'm hungry, so we should stop talking about food.
So, like,
because
you came for me, and I'm like, nah, boo-boo.
Yeah.
Because as many times you make food.
No. You can't do that. Right.
So, I don't
look, I've seen his Instagram. All he do is make food and drink. So, like, it's cool. All I'm saying is I'm hungry, so let's get through.
Let's not talk about food no more.
Right. Because y'all had what y'all had. I had coffee.
So
anyway, let's get into this stuff. I'm really excited to do the podcast this week because there's so many things that are like right on the horizon of coming out. And I'm really excited, one, for fall because I'm just done with humidity. Two, there's a lot of great games coming out in September. And I think the first thing that I want to kind of talk about, and I don't know why I didn't realize this before, is Shadow of the Tomb Raider comes out on September 13th.
Which is coming.
It's right around the corner. I have not pre-ordered the game. I'm considering pre-ordering it as opposed to just doing it as a day one. And the main reason that I was considering pre-ordering the game, not just because I enjoy the franchise, because we've talked about pre-orders before. I typically only pre-order when I already have enjoyed multiple games in the franchise, and it's just a done deal that I'm going to get the game. You know, I don't typically pre-order just to get bonuses or just to get, you know, extra gear in the game or things like that. But the other reason why I was considering pre-ordering Shadow of the Tomb Raider is because if you pre-order the game, they actually let you play the game a couple of days earlier. If you do the digital pre-order, I should say. Let me correct myself. But if you do the digital pre-order, they actually let you play the game a couple of days earlier than the actual physical release day. So, if you digitally pre-order the game that comes out on September 13th, you can actually start playing the game 2 days earlier, which is September 11th. Now, I have two things with that. One, I like the idea of a digital pre-order allowing someone to play the game earlier. Because let's face it, the game's already done. It was Golden Master, which means digitally, it could have been released right then and there on the spot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Versus the press disc one, you actually have to go through production, get things in cases, get, you know, all your paper done and in and shrink wrapped and all that kind of stuff. So there's lead up for production, for release, for physical release. But for digital release, once a game is Golden Master, technically it can be distributed digitally, right? So it's only a time gate that's put on for most of the digital pre-orders. Because think about it. Most games let you download the game early and then you're just behind a time gate that they release it at midnight so that you have the same ability to play it at the same time as everybody who got their physical copies, right?
Right.
And to me, you know, there's less and less of a case to me for that for digital games. Like, if it's ready to go, you've got it on servers, it's ready to be distributed, I can download it now, I've already given you my money for it, why make me sit through a time gate simply to match the folks that, you know, physically want to have the disc or physically need to have the disc for some reason, right? It makes less and less sense to me in today's kind of immediate gratification digital world to still have those time gates other than trying to keep your numbers straight for when a game is released and how its sales have done. And even at that, my brain's like, well, that doesn't make sense because if I pre-ordered it, you know how many pre-orders you've done. So you already have forecasted what money you already have in the bank because I already paid you in full for the digital copy. So you know what your...
Give me my game, please.
So you know what your quote-unquote day one sales would have been because you have all the pre-sale data, right? Sales before this date equal pre-sale. This is the value. Boom. This is the day one estimated value, right? So I'm struggling a little bit with the whole time gate thing, and Shadow really for me is one of those games where I look at it now and I'm like, okay, well, if the game releases on the 13th, but because I do this pre-order, I can actually start playing the game on September 11th, 2 days earlier, then really we don't need to have these time gates on digital exclusives anymore. And we probably shouldn't. You really should just set, you know, your digital available game versus your physical available game. Very similarly to how, you know, you look at like movies in iTunes, right? You have your buy it on digital date, and then your Blu-ray, you know, is typically available a few days later, if not a week or so later, because again, that physical production has to happen, right?
Right.
There are different audiences that buy both, but both get bought. So they don't cannibalize each other as far as the market goes. So I'm just kind of like, if I can have it on digital here and own it on Blu-ray here, why can't I do the same thing with my games? Why can't I just have the digital here and own it on disc here? And let's just make that kind of like the standard rather than putting this, you know, at this point, just artificial time gate in for perception value, I guess, at this point. That's kind of what it comes down to me as. So it really is just kind of reasserting for me that the video game space needs to move that way as well. Especially when you look at, you know, how much of the user base now is very much digital between subscription services, you know, whether it's PS Now or View or just PlayStation Network in general buying games digitally. The same thing on, you know, the Xbox side with Games Pass, Games with Gold. You know, so much is happening digital-wise. You know, we're adding more storage day and day because so many people like that instant gratification of let me buy it and let me just have it. Let me just buy and let me just have it. Like, I don't want to wait for a disc. I don't want to necessarily go to the store to pick one up. I don't actually want to have to take up physical space with my games when really I'm going to play them on the system, so I might as well just have them on the hard drive,
you know, on that system. I feel like there are some people who probably, like, have strong heated debates about this particular, you know, pressed versus, you know, digital. Mm-hmm. Because there are some people who, okay, I may not want a physical copy of the game, but I really do like the first day release, the extra, like, souped up t-shirt, art mm-hmm. book, music. And you don't tend to get that with digital releases. Mm-hmm. So maybe some people sit in that place, like, I'd prefer it digitally because I would get absolutely. The immediacy of that now. But right. I lose out on all the swag because there are some swag dogs out there.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, when you look at most of the SKUs that are available for games, there's something for everybody, right? Like, I have transitioned to primarily digital games. One, I like the instant gratification. Two, I have the storage space for them because external drives and storage upgrades are extremely affordable these days for just about every platform. And two, it also had cured me of my collectoritis because I was either digital only or collector's edition. I wasn't just standard boxing it anymore because for me, like you said, I live in two houses. Either I just want the instant gratification, I just want to jump in and play the game because I've looked at the collector's edition and the things that are in it are not interesting enough for me to warrant the extra spend for the extra swag stuff. And then there are absolutely times where I look at the collector's edition, I'm like, nope, I'm going to wait for the physical disc because I actually do want the swaggage. Or, which is where I'm kind of trending these last few days, is that I actually do both. And I will get the digital game because I want the instant gratification and be able to play the game right now. But I also want the swaggage that's in the collector's edition. So I'll buy the collector's edition and I'll either give away the physical copy to one of our lovely, lovely community members, or I'll give it to a friend because I wanted the game, I got the game, but I also wanted the swag, but I wanted the digital game. Because I'm at the point now when it comes to my collector stuff, I'm very much interested in the swag items for some things, but not necessarily like the disc and the case. I'm not into collecting cases anymore, even steel cases. Like I enjoy the artistry of them. I definitely love how well they're crafted. But I'm not a steel case collector. I'm not a case collector. I think for me, in all honesty, there was this photo, and I think it kind of jaded me on it for a while, which is probably why I gravitated towards digital games in the first place, was there was this photo of this guy who had built an amazing game den, like, in his basement. And he had kept all of his systems, so, like, Atari 2600s and up, so there was, like, 13 or so different consoles, you know, Dreamcasts, well, RIP Dreamcast, in his lair, as I'll call it. And he had, you know, across all the systems and things, every cartridge and every box game that he had ever purchased. And it was something like, I want to say like over 5,000 or over 6,000 games. And they were all organized. And I was just marveling at these shelves and shelves and shelves of all these different game cartridges and discs and cases. And I was like, even though it was well organized and it was an absolutely beautiful room, I take nothing away from this guy. More power to him on the collection. It was absolutely gorgeous. But I remember thinking, like, after, like, how color coordinated it was and how organized it was, and I was marveling at that, I went, I don't want to do that. I don't want to be that. Like, that's not the kind of collector, curator, or gamer that I am or that I actually want to be. Because for me, that very much, I think, at the end of the day, felt like a status symbol. Like, I am a gamer. Look upon my game systems and rejoice. And that's not me. And I don't want to be that. And so I kind of looked really hard at myself at how I was treating the collector's edition things that I was getting. Cause like there were some things that I like started not taking things out of the box with. And like, I literally was like, that's going to be real cool. And I put it over in a corner and I was like, no, I buy these things because I'm really interested in the items and I want to display them, but I don't want to display them in their case. I actually want to put them out and display. I'm not that kind of collector, you know? And so that's why I like, when I did the collector's edition of Gears, like I took the Marcus Fenix stack shoe out. I actually took out the background that you could open up and like have a environment from Gears behind the statue. And for the longest time I had that in my office on my desk. And I was like, if I'm going to get any of these things, if I'm going to start collecting any of this swag, it always has to be from the place of it is going to be in display. And I even started falling back into that not taking them out of the boxes with my Funkos. Because I started collecting Funkos and like I took some of them out and put them on display. And then I started getting other ones and I'm like, oh, this is not going to come out of the box. And this isn't going to come out of the box. And I'm like, stop. Ninja, that's not the kind of collector you want to be. And that's not to take anything away from those kinds of collectors, because there is a lot of value in these items. And if you can keep them pristine, you know, you can have a higher resale. And if that's what you want to do, that's great. And I support that. That's just not for me. And so I work really hard to make sure that I don't stay in that space that is unauthentically me as a gamer.
Right.
In order to, like, earn some kind of mythical cred to be a gamer. Oh, you've got your Funkos. I can see they're in their box. So, yeah, you totally are a collector and you're a gamer because, like, you know not to take them out of the box. No, I just haven't taken it out of the box because I don't have a physical space to put it in. And so it's easier for me right now to keep, like, my Mercy in her box. But when I do have my space set up the way that I want to, like, for my stream space, absolutely there's going to be a shelf and there's just going to be a bunch of Funkos on a shelf and, you know, other things out in the world. So I think that's kind of like why I gravitated really quickly to digital, because it kept me from having the stuff to keep in the box. And I think that's part of the reason why I also kind of moved away from like boxes. Cause like you saw my display. I have all my old 360 games mounted on a wall. The ones that I kept. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, I used that as my backdrop when I was shooting, you know, some of our early videos, which I absolutely loved. And I was going to recreate that in my stream space. And then I stopped myself because I was like, it kind of feels like a braggadocious wall as opposed to these are, you know, the games that I own and I've had a great experience with. It started to feel like this is my gamer cred up on the wall. And I was like, no, I don't want to do that. That's not, just having a lot of games doesn't make you a gamer and doesn't make you an active part of the community. And so I started really thinking very hard on that, which is why I, you know, was like, I'm probably going to do, you know, Shadow as a digital game. But then the other part of my brain kicked in and went, whoa, 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 whoa. The game physically releases on the 13th. If you do the digital pre-order, you can play on September 11th. September 11th. Yeah, that's the hum that started going in my brain. And I was like, I don't know that. that anybody in marketing really thought about this. Maybe you want to move that, like, 3 days early. You play 3 days early. You can start playing on September 10th. Because
that would have been better.
For the global world, it's not a big deal. But doing anything new for the first time or anything being available or released on September 11th, I just think from a marketing perspective and from a empathetic position is wrong.
Yeah.
I just, like, I kind of like.
I feel very awkward about that. You know, like.
So I'm hopeful that there won't be any backlash because I don't want that to overshadow the game. And I haven't really seen people talking about that. But I looked at it now because I was in the store and I was getting ready to do the pre-order. And I was just like, ooh, you play the game a whole 2 days earlier on 9/11. I was like, did anybody actually read this text out loud before they approved that they were going to do this? Because I don't think you should. I don't think you should do this. I just think September 10th. So when I do the pre-order for Shadow of the Tomb Raider, because I'm really looking forward to this game. I've been looking forward to it since Rise of the Tomb Raider. Even with the early access beginning on 9/11, I probably will not play it on 9/11. Yeah. That's just me personally. But I am very, very excited to see, you know, where Lara's journey is going to take her. And, you know, supposedly we're going to get, you know, closer to the Lara that we know and love from the original games and be much more gritty, you know. Because let's face it, like in the original games, Lara didn't give a fuck about busting a cap in, you know, someone's ass. Although mostly she was just killing, like, tigers and alligators.
I mean, she was killing things that were trying to kill her.
Right.
And so if you didn't aggress, she didn't aggress, and stuff was cool.
Right. But if you did, alligator,
then she came for you.
Like, you go and catch these guns.
But so, only because you started it.
Right. Don't start no stuff. Won't be
no
stuff.
Don't get no stuff. Right? story of the life. Okay. Stamped truth. Fire.
That's just a universal truth. But I'm really excited to see the progression of the character in the game. I think that you know, the team at Crystal Dynamics and you know, the Square Enix group, that they have done really a fantastic job on this reboot. You know, because reboots don't always go well.
Yes.
Sometimes in a reboot.
I mean, I don't know why you're gingerly saying that. That's just kind of a fact.
Because there are always exceptions that prove the rule, right? I would say that this Tomb Raider reboot is an exception that proves the rule. I think that, you know, there are other games that have had a good first outing in a reboot franchise, and then maybe their follow-up games didn't quite live up to the hype, but they've done a really good job. Like, I think people forget, but, like, Metro was a thing before, you know, the current edition of consoles. Call of Duty, Modern Warfare, if you want to be technical, is a reboot of the franchise because the games had stayed for so long in, you know, everything from Vietnam War back. You didn't have any modern guns and people were like asking for it. And so that's when they introduced the Modern Warfare ones to kind of take the franchise forward in the future. Cause you know, once you've redone World War II a couple of times, like,
I mean, how many more times can you redo
Battlefront? But like, there's only a certain number of times that you can go to that well. And so, you know, Modern Warfare and then Advanced Warfare,
you know, I don't get it.
Reboots really of the franchise. Okay. And there's some very good Modern Warfare games. There are some very good Advanced Warfare games. Are all of them as a whole, if you look at them as reboots, good?
No.
No.
There are some that are stronger than others.
Right.
I'll say that.
Okay. So again, there are reboots that are good. You know,
but I don't, you know, but now that we talk about this, like the whole, you know, Groundhog Day shooter, rinse and repeat kind of format.
Yeah.
Like, there have been so many wars throughout history. Like, why can't we play with some more of those?
I think that there's a couple of things there, right? Like, any time that you work with something that is a known quantity, especially when you're dealing with wars, which are typically raised for social, political issues, or religious issues, those are very precarious areas to play in, right? Especially because when you deal with wars, ultimately, when they end, you have a winner and you have a loser, but at great cost, right?
Right.
So how do you approach that in an interactive way that is not going to offend or glamorize what in essence is a quite horrific thing? Any way you slice it, a war is a horrific thing, right?
Well, I mean, so okay.
It's difficult, so you kind of got to pick the big ones that, like, almost everybody was involved in. So
or everybody at least knows about.
And that everyone is familiar with. Okay. That you really can't offend anyone. Because, like, even, like, Germany is like, yeah, Nazis were bad. We did that. We're sorry. We will not discuss
it. It's like, we'll we are no longer in that headspace, or at least a chunk of us are no longer in that headspace.
Right. Like, we went through a phase. We realized we went through a phase. We're through the phase now. And we will take our punishment, and we'll just be over here. And if anybody would like some...
Well, I mean, I'm kind of glad that you brought up, like, obviously, like, the staple big bad is always kind of...
The staple big bad is always Nazis. Because, like, globally, the majority of people are like, Nazis are bad.
Right. But I mean, we can do that. Even with that, because, you know, like, You have your oh God, I'm now blanking on the name of the game.
Wolfenstein.
Even in Wolfenstein, though, that we've seen, like, they've pushed the boundaries a little bit, where it's like, hey, by the way, in this alternate universe, you know, the Nazis won.
Well, I mean, like, Helsing Ultimate did that, too. And
it's like, hey, guys.
For Helsing Ultimate to get animated, right?
It's like it's like, we want to play around with that. It's like, but why, though? It's like, it'd be an interesting story. And, like... Like, don't get me wrong, like, I haven't played a Wolfenstein game forever, but my husband has played and has all of the current ones. I think the new Colossus came out, and I know he got it, but I don't think he started it. But I'm just like, you know, I think in the start of that game, you're seeing some backstory of Blazkowicz a little bit more. They went to a place that I wasn't too sure of, because, you know, apparently, you know, Blazkowicz's dad was not necessarily the nicest of dads. Mm-hmm. But I mean, oh no, a strong male with, like, a broken dad figure in his life. Not necessarily original. But they actually kind of talk about Blazkowicz as a kid, like, having, like, an interlude with, like, a little brown girl. And, like, his mom, who is foreign, though I'm not exactly sure what... like, where she hails from, but you could definitely tell that she's not American. But she's like, I don't see a problem with it. And Blazkowicz's dad, like, beats her, and he's like, no son of mine is going to associate, and I have to make him see things in a different perspective. And, like, in the first, I want to say 20 minutes of the game, he finds you because you're hiding from him and you're a kid, and he ties you up to this shotgun and puts your dog in front of you, and you have the option to, like, shoot your dog or not shoot your dog. I had to walk away at this point because, like, I've been very sensitive to animal cruelty in life and in games. So I was like, husband, if you're going to do what I think you're going to do, I need to go in the bedroom because I cannot physically watch you do this. And obviously, you could actually opt to shoot away from your dog, but you're still kind of stuck there because your dad, like, tied you to it. And then your dog your father just does it. So, like, you're like, yeah, good lesson there, dad. I like that we're venturing into that story, and you can kind of see, you know, Blazkowicz's journey of, you know, finding, you know, seeing that, you know, different is not necessarily wrong, or that there is always kind of a big bad somewhere, and sometimes the big bad is not out there, sometimes it's inside.
Right. So deep, kind of deal, right? And it's ultimately about fighting Nazis.
Right?
And zombies. And
but
zombie
I mean,
Nazis.
Like, who's to say that if we ever ventured out into... I think it's a double-edged sword, very much like you bring it up. Because, you know, if you go and you're like, oh, I want to go make a game about the... one of the dynasties. Okay, well, Amanda, that was...
Well, I mean, they are being made. Have you ever seen...
I mean...
Eastern games? Have you played The Romance of the Three Kingdoms? Have you ever played a Dynasty Warriors game?
That's
I mean,
true.
What are they up to? Like, the 40th game in
the
series?
Right, that's true.
Or like, I think there's a new Oroku coming.
I would love to do a game about, like, Pearl Harbor. I don't know how we feel about that. Ooh, I want to do one about the Vietnam. Nope, not sure how I feel about that.
There have been games that have been set in those spaces, but not are actually about that particular excursion.
But I mean, like
those, again, like you're saying, are the double-edged sword.
And right, so, because I mean, I think by not addressing them or approaching them, like, I feel like we're kind of saying, like, no, that's way too sensitive, and, like, we really can't go there. But then there's still stories that I think a majority of people would benefit from if some light got exposed.
I agree with you.
I can understand that there's a scale. Clearly.
I think there are some great stories there. I think where the difficulty comes in kind of the more sensitive things, right, where, you know, you have these very specific interactions that are happening, is that it's hard to do that in a grand scale as like a FPS. Like, you can do the World at War games when the whole world is involved, and you can do that as this big, massive thing, right? Some of the things that you're mentioning are very specific individual encounters that were part of a bigger war. And not that there aren't stories there, but those aren't necessarily stories you can do on a grand scale, right? A Pearl Harbor game would, in essence, as far as an action game goes, be very short.
True.
Right? If you did it, so you treated it as a narrative.
It has like some, you gotta find like the.
But even at that, you're still talking maybe a 3-hour game because it's a specific single
vignette
incursion, right? That was part of a larger thing. So as an action title, as an FPS, those other battles don't necessarily make sense for a big multiplayer, massive online game because they're not massive events themselves. But if you were to tackle them as a narrative game,
maybe.
I think then you open up more.
Oh, like options. It could be kind like of
if you
like
went
a
the Valiant Hearts
like,
route.
What is it? Like
you could
it
do
could
a
be where, it could be like the Vanishing Ethan Carter, where it's kind of like a walk adventure where you're walking through like an old house.
You could do
of like,
that
of like of someone who was in the war and maybe find like their letters when they first were at basic or like a postcard when they first left basic and got deployed.
Right. And,
like,
you do have those other experiences, right? You have, you know, things like this war of mine. You could go, you know, the Valiant Hearts route. You know, Pearl Harbor.
If you've never played Valiant Hearts, by God, you have
do
to.
It.
Oh,
it'll
my
wreck
God.
You in a good way.
Oh, it's so good.
Fun along the way, like the musical car thing.
Oh, my God, yes.
So frustrating, but so
well, not even that. I just think it was just strongly impactful in such a profound
it was it's a
like,
beautifully
way.
Beautifully done game, and it is a crazily emotional game for me, but
highly triggering
to do those other things that happen, you know, in a different narrative, in a different way. You know, they're not necessarily grounds for an action adventure or an FPS, but you can definitely tap into, you know, those other incursions that happen in a way that is interactive, that can share those experiences and tell those stories for people. So I do think that, you know, to your point, there are a whole lot of other battles and a whole lot of other wars that involve other people than just, you know, the big Axis powers that, you know, could be fodder for great games. And, you know, who's to say that in the indie spaces in other countries that they're not happening? It's just that we're not aware of them here in North America. You know, it very much could be. But I do think that there's value in them. And I hope to see more creativity like that come into the game space. Because, you know, like your reaction when I said Valiant Hearts. Like, I love when people have reactions to games like that. You know, and
I mean, I think there are more games out there that deserve better reactions than the ones that they have currently been given. And I think that's just because, you know, gamers are, you know, like a spectrum on, like a rainbow colored spectrum on a rainbow. Like, some of them will appeal to some and some not at all to others. And that's just kind of the way that mm-hmm. pie is cut. But I mean, I think there are so many. I want to do an analysis on this because I would really like to know what everybody's like wow game is, because I feel like there's some potential there to see that, you know, mind.
Well, maybe we'll throw a survey up and, you know, let people, you know, fill it out and put it out on
maybe.
The web and just, I'd like to know, then you can take the analysis and maybe like write something on the site about it and your own thoughts.
I know, right? Because it's not like I have my own.
You know, whatever. Right. Anyway, that's kind of what I just wanted to bring to the table today. And, you know, I know that you got some stuff that you want to share. And if we have any extra time, I have another anime to talk about. And if we don't, then I'll talk about it on the next podcast.
Okay. So actually, I've got two little first impressions of some games that I've experienced recently. And then I actually am probably going to take a little detour into, like, Emotional Town just a little bit.
Oh, boy. Let me get some tea. Oh, wait.
Yeah, get comfortable. Damn. Get your emotional support pillow or puppy if you have one. Because I may delve into areas where people might start having an emotional response. Maybe. I don't know.
All right. So ready your butts, people.
But first things first. So I played a game with my husband the other day on Steam called 39 Days to Mars, which at first I wasn't about
it. Is it 30 seconds to Mars?
No, 39 Days to Mars.
I know, but isn't 30 seconds to Mars a band?
I think so, but their music wasn't in this game, so I don't care.
Okay.
But at first I was very much like not about it. Believe it or not, the animation was really charming and whimsical and infectious, and it actually kind of reminded me of, if you ever played, and I'm going to get this wrong, but there's those types of games that are out there that are pretty much like narrative games where like not too much is happening, or actually it's probably fairly close to West of Loathing.
Okay.
Yeah. Kind of. So like very adventure. So very like, you know, very simple animation, like stick figure type-esque with like a same color background with like some things that you can interact with.
Okay.
But essentially in this game, which you can play singularly or with a friend, is the story of these two, or one British gentleman. At the start of our game, since we played together, they're both living in this house, and they're like, you know, I would like to venture to Mars. And one man's like, well, we need a map, and a ship, and our scones and our tea. And, like, you have to do these puzzles where, and it's really funny, because at first I thought it was going to be, like, very simple puzzles where, like, you know, you just have to, like, move a box over, or, like, you know, read something. And I mean, those puzzles do happen in this game, but for a lot of these puzzles, you're operating as either the left hand or the right hand of somebody. So I think each of the characters, one is predominantly left-handed and one is predominantly right-handed.
Okay.
So at one point you're like, oh, you need to find a map. So you have to go to this table and the map has been cut up into pieces. And as your hands alone, like you could drag something, but if it was inverted, you needed the other person's hand to rotate it. So, like, you have to actually work together. You can't just be in the same space doing things that accumulate into a success. Like, you actually have to work as the same person and operate that way. Kind of like a quap or a where you're trying to sort of.
Oh, quap.
But I mean,
I still have nightmares about quap.
They're not doing it, like, in this game. They're not doing it to the detriment of the player. Like, they clearly want you to succeed. And, like, at first, like, I just don't rotate very well, so I...
Like, hey, truer thing has been said.
Right? So, like, my husband's like, will you please just hold it? I'll rotate. And I'm like, sure, honey. I'm sorry. I thought I was doing it right. I wasn't doing it right. But as the story progresses, like, you finally get your map, you get the stuff that you want to put on your spaceship, because apparently you have most of your ship, like, ready. You just need these other things. And you get on your ship and you fly off, and the musical score is very like soft and kind of, I want to say kind of sad. So like halfway through, I'm like, we're not going to make it to Mars, are we? Like something terrible is going to happen. And we, as these two cheery British gentlemen with their top hats and like steampunk goggles, like, I'm like, I don't even know how old we are. Like, we could be old men, and, like, maybe 39 days to Mars is because, like, we're going to die in 39 days or, like, whatever.
Wow.
Like,
I took it to something really dark.
Like, I'm sorry. Like, as you're playing the game, like, it's sweet and it's innocent, but then you're like, but there's this tinge of bittersweetness that just kind of sits on the back of your neck. Like, You know, like you're waiting for someone to like come up behind you and be like,
no, no, I'm actually never waiting for that. That's not a thing. And that's really spooky. And I don't do that again.
Like, it's really kind of sad. And like, you kind of feel like that's going to happen at any moment in this game. You know, and granted, like, these two men are going, like, and I mean, the spaceship is not, like, well-designed either. It's really kind of thrown together. And at one point, like, one of the guys goes out into the, onto this balcony. He's like, man, he's like, nothing can go wrong today. And as he says it, like, eight things blow up in your ship, and you have to fix them. And as you're fixing them, the days are ticking by. So, like, you'd go through, like, two or three challenges, and, like, 12 days have gone by. And you're like, oh, I'm like, so we're much closer to our 39 days to Mars. Oh, no, we ran out of our food. We have to go and kill space squid to stock up our food supply. Oh, wait, but I can't do that because I'm really hungry right now and I need to go make a scone, which let me divert you for a moment. So like I said, these are two British gentlemen. And it seems like between every other mission or puzzle or every...
You gotta make scones?
You either have to make tea... for one of them, because they're like, man, this has to wait until I have a good cuppa. And then, like, you have to go into the kitchen, and literally, like, a little note will show up, like, Albert likes this, he wants cold, milky, sweet tea. And, like, you literally have to, like, pour the teapot very quap style, and, like, it's not very elegant at all. And you have to, like, pinch the tea bag, and, like, tea bag, like, two or three times into the cup. And then you have to grab these cubes that look like they're ice cubes or sugar cubes, but you don't know unless you click over them. So you can't just put cubes in there because you don't know which cubes you're putting in.
Yeah, don't put salt cubes in your tea.
Oh, man, because you can. Like, they give you the option. And then at one point, because there's Albert, who really likes tea, and then there's Baxter, who really likes scones. So Baxter's like, man, I'm really famished for a scone. And then you have to, like... Does he want a whole scone? Does he want a half scone? Does he want strawberries on it? Does he want clotted cream on it? Does he want butter on it? Does he want jam on it? Does he want like a spot of jam or does he want a shit ton of jam? Oh, does he want some red currants on there? Put like a red currant on there for Baxter. And like, these are some fancy ass scones.
Yeah, that's bougie.
And like the whole time as they're venturing into Mars, like you're constantly either having tea or scones. And by the end of the game, I was like, honey, I think I want tea. And, like, I kind of want a scone, but it's too late for scones. And, like, it was just so infectiously, like, cute and simple. And, but, you know, the idea of teamwork is so prevalent in it. And you don't, I think we as people don't realize just how much we do on our own until games break it down to the point where you're literally doing one or two sets of functions, but can't complete it without the other half. So, like, it says a lot about the duality, I think, of life and stuff, which I thought was really cute. And just to lightly spoil it, nothing terrible happens to these gentlemen.
Good. I was really worried.
They do make it to Mars. Yay. They do have to fight a space squid, though, because they killed its babies, which those are the space squid that you get earlier in the game. You don't realize that they were babies because then the mom shows up and she's kind of pissed. And then you fight her with your umbrella in space, and then she eats your whole ship because, you know, she's a space squid. And then you have to break out of her stomach, and then you go to Mars and you put down a blanket and you have the best scone and the best tea. And that's how the game stops. So, and the game starts over if you choose to do that. So that was super cute. And then quickly, while I haven't played this game yet, I do kind of want to. And I think this might actually be a game that I would probably want to stream potentially with my better half. Because it's called Doodle Date. And I saw the Game Grumps. Yes. So the game's called Doodle. Like, you know, when you're drawing.
I thought you said diddle. I was like,
no,
what?
Doodle. I'm not talking about Fingal, which don't even get me started on that game. But doodle date. Like, when you're drawing little doodles and date. Mm-hmm. And I think this is very much up my alley because, you know, I've talked about many dating sim on this show, you know, from, you know, the simple, you know, Kitsune's Kitchen, where you fall in love with appliances, to, you know, the one where they're birds or they're skeletons or the Horse Prince one, which I still haven't actually played but have nightmares about. But this one seems really, really cute. We're literally at the beginning of the game. So if you've ever played like a Jaxbox game, like if you've ever played Drawful, where like they give you prompts and you have to like make a picture as close to the prompt as humanly can or as artistically as you can, depending on your level of talent and skill. So at the beginning of Doodle Date, they pretty much ask you like, oh, draw your dream person. And like you have to draw like the base dream person. And then it's like, draw your dream person acting shy. Now draw them acting mean. Now make a sexy face. So that literally, apparently what happens in this game is your character, which they don't tell you what gender you are because I don't think it particularly matters. But you've come back from summer break. And, like, you didn't have a really good summer break because, like, you have no friends and you're kind of a sad sack. And, like, you're pissed that everybody else had, like, really great summers. And, like, you haven't had any summer romance. And you go into your locker and there's your composition notebook, which I really appreciated the graphics on the composition notebook because we've all had that black and white Mod Podge thing that, like, I'd put all my secrets inside and then I'd forget where it is so someone can find my secret somewhere if they ever look. But literally this character shows up, I think her name is Claire, and like she looks like a decent enough girl, and she's just like, we've been waiting for you all summer. So now your notebook is talking to you because you clearly have mental problems and you need a human connection, and you're getting it from your notebook. And clearly what happens is she's like, you know, we've been waiting this whole time, and you know, you can make whatever you want in this world, and you get sucked into the notebook. And not the Nicholas Spark version, obviously. But you literally, the character that you make shows up and she's very much about you, like very much about you. And apparently like it's kind of like that whole tomb world or cool world where, you know, you probably shouldn't sleep with your creation, but you may, you can choose to, which I haven't seen the Game Grumps complete yet. So I don't know what happens, but I'd imagine, you know, that there's a good end. And then there's a bad end. And then there's the end where you get a lot of paper cuts because of one of your choices. I'm not sure yet, but I'm kind of curious about it because I do love me a good dating sim every once in a while. So I might have to play that and come through and talk to you guys about that in the future. But those are two games that are on my radar, and one that I've played and enjoyed and one that I plan to play. So those are like my little panda bits. And then I just kind of wanted to talk.
Panda bits.
But I also kind of wanted to talk a little bit to you guys about some comic book movie / you know, just nerd movie impressions that I've had. So, I mean, I've never been one to shy away from things that I have seen and have not seen. And I've always kind of disclosed the things that I've engaged in and things that I haven't. And for the longest time, I utterly refused to watch Logan. And I think there have been several podcasts where you've talked about it, Ninja, and I'm like, yep, haven't seen it and had no intentions to ever do so. And I think some people were under the impression that, like, I just have a thing against Hugh Jackman. I don't. That man is gorgeous, and I love him. And I don't have an issue with X-Men in general. Just their movies haven't been great. I mean, outside of, you know, obviously, you know, the Wolverine movies. Granted, there have been, like, four too many, in my personal opinion. And I think at the time that Logan came out, I was pretty burnt out on Wolverine.
Yeah, I believe that is an accurate statement for many of us. I mean, Hugh Jackman was burnt out on Wolverine. So.
Right, which is why he was like, I'm done after this. But I mean, he's been Wolverine for so many years now. Like, that's what happens. And I mean, but when Logan came out, everyone's like, oh my God, Panda, like, this is a movie. Like, this is something, like, because my husband went to go see it with our high maintenance boyfriend, Oscar, who's not actually our boyfriend, but he's my husband's like only friend, or rather
he's your husband's boyfriend.
My husband is the only friend that this guy has. So when he wants to do something, he bends over backwards for him, and I can't even get him to buy me Godiva chocolates. But whatever, you know, I'm married. So what? But they went to go see Logan, and I was like, I don't want to go see Logan. I think I have an idea of what that was going to be about, and like maybe I'll catch it on HBO months later. Granted, it's been a while since Logan, and I just finally sat down and agreed to watch it. And like I said, I don't have an issue. I've never had an issue with you know, the, you know, Wolverine and Logan and any of that. I just was not in the mood. And sitting down finally and watching this movie, I was shocked, I think, because I knew that this movie was going to be really emotional, because everyone was kind of, you know, the hype train was like, man, this is Logan the way that we've never seen it. Remember, this isn't a Wolverine movie. Like, this is Logan. This is like a narrative, like narrative character study driven piece about the man Logan, and not necessarily the hero, anti-hero, Byronic hero, whatever you want to call him, Wolverine. Mm-hmm. And as I was sitting there watching it, like, I immediately had a strong emotional response to it. And I mean, I don't have to go through the movie because I think a lot of people have seen it, but generally you are seeing, you know, the last few bits of mutants who have managed to survive. And I say survive because I wouldn't say that any of them are living in this movie. And you are watching Logan, who is now, you know, not healing as fast as he used to and isn't recovering from battles as quickly as he used to. And age, you can see it's happening. And obviously, I think the adamantium that's in his body is now kind of poisoning him and slowly killing him. And his abilities are nowhere near where they used to be. And he is taking care of Professor Xavier, who, as we know, it depends. Everyone says he's the world's, like, most powerful psychic, but at the same time, I know people think that Jean Grey ends up becoming the more powerful psychic after all that stuff and whatever, but
it depends. I mean, do you actually want to get into this conversation? Because it can go a lot of places, like...
Right?
I would... So,
well, because like, where I read, like, no.
So this is what I'll say, because I am not the foremost expert on the Marvel Universe, but I did spend a lot of time of my youth reading much of the X-Force through Uncanny, and then I stopped right after the Phalanx Covenant collecting Uncanny X-Men, and it's gone a whole bunch of places after that. And I did read some New Mutants, and I read some Gen X and things like that. What I would say is, like, there's this great book, and I can't remember what it was called, but for a while there were these anthologies of the comic universes that were done. And so there was a big book on Marvel and a big book on DC that basically introduced you to every character that's been introduced in the comic universes across all books.
Okay.
And talked a little bit, did a little synopses of each of them. And then you could go to, like, their chapter and basically get their entire synopsis of their run up until that point that the book was printed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what was really interesting in the Marvel book was kind of looking at really four key, I would say, psychics and elementals. And the ones that they looked at that I thought were very interesting in how they described them were Jean Grey, Psylocke, Scarlet Witch, and Professor X. And what's interesting in all of them is, and how they talked about them, they actually had Jean Grey as the strongest psychic, because while Xavier was able to, for a time, put a bind on her to control her and control, you know, Phoenix really is the major psychic.
Okay.
Or believed to be the major psychic inside of Jean Grey, and is, you know, otherworldly. So if you're going to strictly make a born of this world psychic, then you really have to look at Psylocke, Scarlet Witch, and Xavier. And personally, I don't agree with that. I think that Jean Grey actually is the strongest psychic known.
I mean, it would make sense to me, only because I'd imagine for an alien psychic at the power level that Phoenix is at, for Jean to even house Phoenix, even in that dormant state, to hold it, because I mean, I doubt it really had a gender, but to be able to even, you know, suppress it and have it dormant within you, I think requires a whole lot of strength there. And then on top of that, once, you know, was awoken, you know, didn't just have your body like blow up and like die.
Right.
I think says a lot. It can. I just wasn't sure. But like in the movie, in Logan, they kept saying, you know, like Xavier's the strongest, powerful mind. And I mean, all right, in that universe, in this timeline, they've just established that that's the case.
Because Jean Grey is gone at that point.
So in the course of the movie, like, clearly at this stage, you realize that Professor X, you know, best, buffest psychic mind is also, like, has a brain degenerative disease. And they don't necessarily say what it is, but, like, the way that he's acting is very, like, kind of a mix of, like, mild schizophrenia with a little bit of dementia and maybe even some Alzheimer's in there for good measure. And, you know, when you finally see the first scene of, you know, Logan doing what he has to do to, you know, to make some type of money, to get some type of medication to help suppress the seizures, because at this point, Professor X is having these seizures where, as he does, his power is unleashed and it's fucking people up. And it's seen as this weapon of mass destruction by, like, the bad guys, because, you know, of course they have to say things that make people fearful of this element. And you just see this broken, worn out, constantly in a perpetual state of grief, Logan, taking care of this man that, you know, while he wouldn't be like, oh man, like, I idolized you, but, you know, low key Def did. And respected everything that Professor X did, and watching this man slowly deteriorate and, you know, not be in control of his gift, like, it's heartbreaking to watch. And if for anyone who's ever seen someone that they love go through, you know, something as debilitating as that, like, it's gonna hit you. Like, they did their research, because, I mean, unfortunately, in our household, we've experienced similar things to this. So, like, watching all that happen, I'm like, oh my God, like, While I don't have psychic powers and, like, I don't have knives that come out of my hands and stuff, like, this scene feels very real. Like, I could plaster this beat by beat in my life outside of, you know, not being Hugh Jackman or, you know, Patrick Stewart, but still. And, like, it bothered me, but in a really good way. And then, of course, like, that's, like, minor plot point A, because then you have the big story with, you know, the fact that, you know, an evil corporation was taking genetics from mutants and then was pumping them into Spanish ladies and having Spanish ladies make babies that now have these abilities. And of course, one of them happens to be Logan. So of course, there's a girl out there, Lara, who's running around with his genetic code, and like, a really nice nurse lady broke her out to try to get her to Eden, which I thought was really weird that the X-Men comics were in the universe, but I like how they played up, like, you know, I love how Logan's like, yeah, this is all bullshit. Like, some of the facts that are in, like, some of the things that happen in these are real, but then they're, like, exaggerated to the point of pure fantasy.
Well, I think that that's, you know, one of the more beautiful things that's ever happened in any superhero movie.
It's like, hey, we're going to acknowledge that this is totally
that this existed, right? Because, of course, something that big and fantastical happening, someone is going to document that story and take it into fantasy realms, and comics would obviously be one of those spaces, right?
Right.
So it's kind of weird when you think about it to be in a world where obviously, like, if there were mutant Ninja Turtles, someone would make a mutant Ninja Turtle comic and webtoon and all these things. Like, it's kind of silly that to have these realms where, like, that doesn't eventually happen.
Like, no one thought about writing a book. Like, I got saved by a giant teenage turtle boy who offered me pizza.
Right.
Like, these people wouldn't be on the Maury Show trying to, like, make a back
be like,
buck.
This Ninja Turtle's
it.
My dad. Like, of course that would, right. Of course that would happen in our world. So I thought that was, like, one of those, okay, this is, like, as much fourth wall breaking that Marvel at the time, you know, is comfortable doing.
Deadpool's like, hold my beer and my nuts.
Right. but anyway. I did think that was a really nice touch, and I did appreciate that.
I tipped my hat slightly to it. I was like, okay, I'm on board with that, sure.
I mean, it still doesn't make up for the Wolverine, but it does help.
Nope. Nothing ever absolves Wolverine. Mm-mm. Nothing does. But anyway, so I mean, throughout the course of this, like, nice nurse lady smuggles this girl out because, you know, bad company was like, oh, we have this better thing. We're just going to scrub all these kids that we've spent years, you know, impregnating women and raising them to, like, become machines. Because, you know, if they don't want to fight and be soldiers, then they're useful to us. And we just found something that will do that. So we're going to kill them all. And all the lady nurses were like, no, we're going to save these children because it's not their fault. And she finds Logan and wants him to know that, you know, this girl that's in the back of her rogue is technically, biologically his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and wants his help to get her to Eden, because this woman, I believe wholeheartedly in the story that this woman believed Eden was real, like really real.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and there's that play on, is it real? Is it not real? Either way, there's a journey here that Logan has to take unwillingly, but then, you know, reluctantly grow. So like, we kind of have this hot dad journey, very similar to like The Last of Us, like, oh, I'll begrudgingly do this thing because I'll get something in return. But then at the end, when he finally does it, he's like, nah, I don't want the thing. You need the thing, because he really wants to have a connection with Laura, but he can't, he doesn't know how to emotionalize and say that.
So here's the thing. Here's the
like,
thing.
It was
Logan.
So beautiful, it, but also Logan, so gut-wrenchingly hard.
Logan almost makes up for the Wolverine, because Logan, unlike many of the Marvel movies, is a good story.
Like,
it,
oh my
gosh.
It is
a good movie. It is not.
What
I,
a way to
I don't
end.
Call Logan a superhero movie.
No.
Logan is just a good movie. The thing that I really appreciate about Logan is, at its core, Logan is a story about fathers and their children. And that is very different in the approach to many of the superhero movies.
I mean, and there's so
right?
many different parallels to it. Because, I mean, like, you have, obviously, the strong biological link between him and Laura, and then that growing.
And then you know, have the non-biological between him and Xavier.
And Xavier.
That's the reason that he breaks down the way that he does when Xavier dies.
Oh, my God. And by the way, like I'm like, oh, he's talking, like, he's so lucid. And, like, and he looks up at, obviously, not the not Logan, the not mm-hmm. Wolverine. And I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no. 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 I'm like, oh, God. And, like, and I'm having this reaction. My husband's like, what? Like, because I was, like, legit, like, tearing up. And he's like, why are you sad? I'm like, because we don't ever know, and they never directly answer it, if Xavier was aware that the Wolverine he's looking at, the one that kills him, is not Logan. I'm like, and now Logan has to, at least for the third half of the movie, has to live with this fact that the man that he admired and loved and cared about left this world possibly feeling or with the solid belief that someone that he cared and loved about did this to him. And like, it was so like, ooh, girl, like I couldn't sit still. Like, I could not process. And I was like, yes, like, this movie was such a look into the mind of the relationship between father and son, whether bloodborne or not, like the connections of a father figure to a person and the journeys that will take.
Right. Because, and, you know, through all of this, you know, and we're just about out of time here, but
yeah,
the beautiful thing about Logan is that,
I mean, a lot of it was, so
like I said, the movie itself is really a journey, a look at relationships of father and child, right? You know, you got to remember that Logan, for most of his journey in the comic book world, is going out into the world with a big chip on his shoulder because he doesn't have or recall his memories or why he has the adamantium and everything. You know, the only thing that he has are the dog tags with, you know, the call name of Wolverine, but he doesn't know why he was a fighter or why he was fighting and why he has these abilities and all those kinds of things. And it is really Xavier that, you know, meets him and takes him under the wing and says, look, I'm going to help you get your memories back, get your life back, and becomes a father figure that, you know, if Logan had a father, he has then lost that memory of. And then you go through the comics and discover, you know, Sabretooth and all of those shenanigans and things like that. But consistently from that point forward in the realm, Xavier becomes the de facto father figure, right?
Right.
Giving him the advice, giving him shelter, letting him grow, supporting him in all of his things, giving him purpose. And so when he then goes into his dark place, obviously the child steps in to then take care of the parent, where the parent had been taking care of the child
right.
before. And then you have that same cycle then repeat with Laura, right? Because you get to the end right. of the movie and Wolverine can no longer fight the
right.
way that he was, because he's losing his abilities. He is becoming in need of care. And the movie ends with Laura protecting her dad before having to let him go.
So, again,
fantastic all the way through. I'm going to end up watching it again today because I'm like, damn, I forgot like how deep this is.
But, oh my God. It is a deep, rich pool. And I think there are just so many, like, I think I might want to rewatch it because I feel like this is one of those movies that you'll catch other nuancey things that you didn't, you don't catch on that first.
Yes, definitely.
But I mean, like, I was like, wow. I'm like, but like I said, I'm still very proud and okay with the fact that I was like, I didn't want to watch it during the hype because I definitely think I would have missed a lot of this if I had been on the hype train.
Like, yeah, because you would have been
it would have been oversaturated,
like,
overstimulated, and I don't think I would have allowed it to just sit with me the way that it did here. So what, like, this is a great movie. Like I said, I don't want to count it as part of the Wolverine trilogy because I think it's its own beast on its own.
It is. Logan is separate from every
from all of that
thing that had come before it.
But I mean, the fact that if we didn't have any of that, I don't think if we would have gotten this if we didn't go through the Wolverine poop. So there's a little appreciation for the Wolverine poop because we did get something fantastic out of it in the end. And I think of all the ways for Hugh Jackman to leave the role, I think this was the best way to do it. That was authentic to the character. So if you haven't watched it like me, be in the right mental place for it. Be in a safe, comfortable place. Get your support puppy or pillow or popcorn. I have a lot of peas on the brain right now. And be ready to have some feels, because there's definitely some feels to be had if you haven't had them yet.
All right. Well, there you have it. We've hit you with emotional from beginning to end. If you enjoyed
emotional sandwich.
Yeah. Be in your feelings. Kiki, do you love me? Don't nobody give a shit. Anyway, make sure that if you enjoyed this podcast that you subscribe. You can get our podcast on iTunes, either on the desktop or through the podcast application by searching for the Eshcast and subscribing. You can also get our podcast on our website, electricsisterhood.com, on vognetwork.com, vognetwork.com. You can also check out some other great shows over there. You can find us on Stitcher Radio. You can find us in Google Play. Pretty much any place that you can get podcasts, you can find our show. So please make sure that you subscribe and share us with your friends on the internet. If there's anything that you'd like us to review, preview, or just get our thoughts on, then hit us up on our social. You can find us on Instagram at ESH News, on Twitter at ESH News, on Facebook.com/Land of Esh. You can leave us comments. You can leave us a message, DM us, slide into them DMs, y'all. And just let us know if there's something that you want us to check out. Also, be sure to check out all the great content that we produce on our website. Bookmark us and check out some of the other great shows that are part of the network. There's KBD over at B3Crew.com with the No Borders, No Race podcast. There's Our Man Hamster Man 2049 streaming live on Twitch Wednesday nights at 9 Eastern. twitch.tv/hamsterman2049 and on his site smashedrook.com. There's one of my favorite humans on the planet, Phil the Issues Guy, with Phil's Recap and Review, which you can find on YouTube. Subscribe, be part of his show live. Fantastic recaps and a great archive of really nerdy stuff on his site, issuesprogram.com. And last but certainly not least, the nerds over at nerdcrave.com, keeping you up to date with all the stuff that nerds crave, like comic books, anime, manga, and more. So please make sure that you check out all of our sites, bookmark them all, hit us up on our social, join us on our video channels, and just be part of the network. Let's just get nerdy together, guys. So with that, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And until next time,
cheers.